You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
153 countries have ratified the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. The convention was originally ratified in 1948 and was intended to prevent a repeat of the genocidal atrocities of World War II. Now, over 75 years after the convention was ratified, South Africa has filed a case to the International Court of Justice alleging that Israel, a member of the convention, has breached their obligations. I spoke to Teresa Dunworth, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Auckland, about the facts surrounding the historic case.
South Africa's application relates to genocide. It's accusing Israel of a breach of the Genocide Convention, and both South Africa and Israel are parties to that treaty from 1948.
What is the definition of genocide that's laid out in that 1948 convention?
So there's two parts to the definition, and one is a series of acts, so physical acts, and the other, which is really going to be at issue in this case, is the question of intent. So in terms of the series of acts, there are things, five acts are set out. Things like killing, which we clearly have here on the facts, also causing serious harm, mental harm, which we have here. And then the third act is deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about a physical destruction or in whole or in part. So that would relate to, you know, stopping humanitarian aid coming through. There's two other acts which are not, as I understand it, not relevant in this case. So preventing births in the group or forcibly transferring children. And then the second part of the definition is an intent. And that is probably one of the most crucial things to understand here, is that the popular understanding of genocide is that it's just mass killing. That's not correct. As a matter of this treaty, we need something like mass killing, and we need an intent to destroy in whole or in part the group, meaning here Palestinians. So the South Africa will have to show this higher special intent, that not only did they intend to kill Palestinians, but they did that with the intent to wipe out the Palestinian race, if you like.
And I guess on that note of intent, what evidence has South Africa presented to try to prove that there's intent from Israel's side when it comes to genocide?
So South Africa, in its pleadings, has relied on specific statements made by Israeli military commanders and senior officials of the Israeli government. That's what they're relying on. And at this stage, it's important to understand that they are just seeking provisional measures. So the test that they have to meet is plausibility. This is not a criminal case where it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. So the threshold of proof really is very low, and they are relying on these statements by Israeli officials and military commanders.
On the other side of that, I guess I also wanted to ask what evidence Israel has presented in their own defense.
Yeah, so Israel, there's sort of three aspects to Israel's defense. The first of all is that they don't, and probably the most important, is that the intent is not there. They say that these quotes that South Africa is relying on have been taken out of context, and that when they have used language of extermination, they have been speaking about Hamas, not the Palestinian people. So that's the first plank of their defense. The second plank of their defense in terms of the humanitarian aid is that they say, and they point to concrete evidence, that they are actually doing all they can to allow aid to come through, to go in and out, subject to their own security interests. They also say that they're not alone responsible for the lack of humanitarian access, that Hamas holds some responsibility for that. And their third plank of defence is that, in fact, the entire operation is them acting in self-defence, and that Hamas continues to be a threat to them, and that they have a sovereign right to defend the existence of Israel. So those are the points that Israel is raising.
Now that both parties have had a chance to present evidence to the ICJ, what are the next steps in the process, and what could be the ramifications of provisional measures being upheld by the ICJ?
Okay, so the next step is that the court will hand down its judgment on provisional measures, and that is expected in the coming weeks, really, because this is like an urgent injunction before our courts. And the other thing to note is that, as it happens, we're just about to see a changeover in some of the judges on the court in the beginning, first week in February. So this will need to be, you know, out of the way. And also, of course, in terms of the humanitarian crisis and, you know, what's happening there, is that it is really important that this happens quickly. So we would expect to see in the next couple of weeks a judgment of the court. And then it will move on to what we call on its merits. And that can take several years, like it could take 3, 4, 5 years. And there may well be challenges along the way in terms of Israel might argue that the court doesn't have jurisdiction, and that would be fully fleshed out before we get to merits. The second part of your question is, you know, what did you say, what impact the provisional measures could have, might have?
Yeah, what were the ramifications of provisional measures being upheld?
So the scholars who are following it closely seem to be agreed that the court will issue provisional measures, but will not, are unlikely to simply direct it to Israel. So in other comparable cases, except for, interestingly, in the Ukraine and Russia, they have called on all parties to cease hostilities. So we'll just have to wait and see. In fact, there has already been some impact of these proceedings. So up to only a couple of days ago, Israel, when there had been statements made in Israel about, again, anti-Palestinian statements, there hadn't been any attempt by the government to rein that in terms of, you know, hate speech and derogatory statements about Palestinians. But actually, the day before the hearing, the Attorney General did issue a statement saying that the State of Israel would take all, you know, possible legal challenges against people in Israel who are making such statements. So that already shows that this litigation is having a little bit of impact. It becomes very difficult in terms of, you know, if Israel defies the court's order, but at least the narrative around it will change. And the alternative of not bringing the litigation is to just stand back and let this unfold without any action, which is obviously, you know, completely unacceptable.
That was Associate Professor Teresa Dunworth of the University of Auckland Law Faculty.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.